The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
In exactly 2 weeks, Florida's six-week abortion ban will take effect. Last month, the Florida Supreme Court upheld the state's 15-week ban as constitutional.
A lot of conversation about this. At the same time, the court approved a proposed amendment that will see Florida voters decide the future of abortion on the November ballot tonight. 10 Tampa Bay's Angelicia Bruton explains what clinics are doing right now to prepare for the ban.
It's the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Welcome back, everyone. I'm Ed Morrissey of HotAir.com, filling in for Drew today and taking your calls at 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. Once again, if you are looking for a chance to look at Timothy Paul Schmaltz's work, he's got his great website there, timothypaulschmaltz.com, and that's S-C-H-M-A-L-Z. A great chat that we had with him. Wish we could have gone on a little longer, actually. And speaking of great chats, Cale Clark's show comes on at the top of the hour. And his topics today are going to be, is Taylor Swift compatible with Catholicism? Plus, infinite confusion over infinite dignity and the week that was. And, you know, I'm actually a little... I can talk a little bit about infinite dignity while we see, we're going to see if we can get Michael New on here to talk a little bit about the Planned Parenthood report and the data that's in that. But, you know, I actually thought that Dignitas Infinita was a pretty good document. I thought it was pretty solid, and especially in terms of what it had to say about gender theory. And it was an opportunity, I think, for people to really hear a clear doctrinal statement about where the Catholic Church stands on these issues. One is that you have to have respect for people who are going through difficulties of gender dysphoria. This is a known psychological condition. It's not terribly uncommon. Adolescents occasionally will have this to an extent that it becomes a stumbling block. But the key there is to have them work through that, because in almost all cases, it will resolve. And it will resolve because people use therapies that are grounded in reality, grounded in biological reality, grounded in their own reality, the reality around them. And in order to make sure that they get through that, though, you have to make sure that people aren't telling them that somehow the unreality is the preferred direction to go in. And that's where we're at with turning gender dysphoria into sort of a sex change industry. And so Cale Clark is going to go way into more detail on this than I'm ever going to go into. He's going to give you a great look at it in his show today. So starting at 5 Central Time, be sure to tune in the Cale Clark Show. I just wanted to throw in a little bit of that because I was actually pretty impressed with Infinite Dignity, the latest Vatican declaration, and hoping that it is going to be a wake-up call. Right along with the CAS report in the United Kingdom and the information that we're getting from Denmark, there's all sorts of actual data now that underscores church teaching on the transgender issue. We do now have Michael New with us. Michael New is joining us to talk about the Planned Parenthood report, some of the data that's in there and what it means. Michael New is an associate scholar at the Charlotte Lozier Institute and a research associate at the Bush School at the Catholic University of America. You can follow him on Twitter at Michael_J_New. Michael, welcome to the show.
Oh, thanks for having me. Much appreciated.
Well, it's great to have you on and glad that you could make it. And, you know, we're talking about the Planned Parenthood report. You have some information on the data there. And I'm curious as to what is remarkable in this annual report.
Well, it's kind of the same story every year. More abortions, more taxpayer funding, fewer health services. So to provide a quick rundown, Planned Parenthood performed over 390,000 abortions in 2023. That's a new record. They perform about 40% of all the abortions in the U.S., are performed by Planned Parenthood. So that's really tragic. They keep getting more and more taxpayer dollars. They received nearly $700 million from U.S. taxpayers in 2023. That's a 4% increase from the previous year. Meanwhile, they do fewer and fewer health services, fewer preventive care visits, fewer pap tests, fewer adoption referrals, and fewer cancer screenings. So this is, you know, not a one-year anomaly. This is a trend. They do more abortions, they get more tax refunding, and they provide less and less in the way of health care.
Well, these are, and you're right, some of this is, you know, same old, although more so. I'm curious about the decline in preferred health services in the past year, or at least in the new annual report, because this was one of their defenses when Republicans were in control of Congress, was that to defund them would be to defund health services. Is this a result of not having that sort of political pressure on them, that they don't feel the need to necessarily be as demonstrative of claims on providing healthcare services, or is this just something that they're veering off of?
I think what it makes clear is that their priority is abortion. You know, they may offer some health services as kind of, in some respects, a PR gesture, but Planned Parenthood's main priority, you know, was and probably will always be abortion. And we see this in the long-term data. I mean, this year's report is not an anomaly or a stray data point. I mean, I've tracked this for, you know, 10, 20 years. In the past 10 years, if you go back to 2013, Planned Parenthood performed over 20% more abortions, and they've done 58% fewer cancer screenings and 67% fewer prenatal services. So these are long-term trends. I think whatever health they do is just for PR purposes. Plain, pure, and simple, they are an abortion business.
So one of the interesting developments in this data is the fact that there's been a pretty significant increase in telehealth appointments, right? This is the, these are, you know, remote, remote health appointments to deal with, you know, abortion by pills, right? This is the, this is sort of their new business model, and it's pretty significant from what I see in the data. It's close to, it's a little over a quarter of all the abortions apparently were on the basis of telehealth appointments. Do I have that data right?
I'm not, that sounds correct. I mean, certainly they have really stepped up telehealth. I mean, unfortunately, what we've seen happen is rules about chemical abortions have become a lot more permissive. The Biden administration, FDA, continued the COVID-era policy of letting women obtain these dangerous chemical abortion drugs without an in-person medical exam. And Planned Parenthood does that. And I think that some of this increase is due to just the increase in, you know, these chemical abortions and the increase in women who get these chemical abortion pills without an in-person medical exam. So I think that's obviously fatal for unborn children, but very bad public health as well. I mean, if a woman has an ectopic pregnancy and obtains a chemical abortion, that could be fatal. If she's further along in gestation than she realizes and obtains a chemical abortion, that could have some negative, serious health repercussions. So, again, their emphasis on telehealth is not consistent with good public health.
And we're speaking with Michael New from the Charlotte Logier Institute, taking your calls at 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149, if you've got questions for Michael or myself about the Planned Parenthood report. One of the areas that I had heard or that I've read that Planned Parenthood was exploring as an alternate business model for states where abortions are either banned or greatly restricted was in the sex pediatric, well, not necessarily strictly pediatric, but sex change therapies, right? Not surgical therapies, but medicinal therapies, puberty blockers, that sort of thing, hormone treatments. I don't know if that is, if that was significant enough in this previous annual report, because I think it goes from July 22 to June 23. Am I correct about that?
That's correct. Yes.
Yeah. That's their fiscal year. And I don't know if they have been, if they stepped it up in that period, because of course, this is the same period in which, you know, Dobbs was decided and they had to, they were still fighting that battle on several different fronts. But what can you tell us about Planned Parenthood's entree into the sex change industry? Is that Is that proceeding? Is that mostly aspirational at this point? And how much of their resources are committed to that?
I mean, I think their numbers are going up, but they don't advertise it. You know, they do list in their annual report other procedures. And among those other procedures include what they call transgender services. You know, that would include probably puberty blockers. That would probably include hormone treatments. But it's lumped in with a bunch of other things they do. So they don't give us hard data on transgender services year to year. I think they realize it's a sensitive issue politically. You know, I think they probably are aware there may be a political backlash if they do advertise big increases in these quote-unquote transgender services. So they are clear that they do them, but they don't really provide us with hard data about how many or what the trends look like.
And so that's probably not going to be an explicit line item on the ledger is what you're telling me, Michael.
At least in the foreseeable future. I mean, the politics surrounding this issue could change, but I think that they realize, again, it's very sensitive politically, and advertising big increases in quote-unquote puberty blockers or, you know, hormone treatments probably would not be wise from a PR perspective.
Well, and especially of late. I mean, I was just mentioning this before we brought you on. Infinite Dignity document from the Vatican talks about the complete inadmissibility of sex changes, that people are created biologically male and biologically female, and no amount of chemicals or surgery is going to change your biological sex, and it shouldn't, because there's dignity in both sex. But part of this, you know, it's certainly that's going to have some influence, I think, on people when they're discussing these things. I think that Infinite Dignity document gives Catholics, for instance, a good grounding for being able to debate this issue. But there's secular sources now that are coming out. And the CAST report, I don't know how much you're familiar with this, Michael, so, you know, I'm throwing this at you sort of cold, and I just kind of want to get your reaction to some of this. The CAST report in the United Kingdom was the culmination of, I think it was either a four-year or five-year review of sex change therapies at the National Health Service in the UK. And what the CAST report found, it was very condemning of this industry, saying it wasn't based on any science. In fact, it was quite possibly doing a whole lot of damage to children and teens, and that the NHS should stop all support for it unless, you know, better science came along to support the idea of this. And I mean, this is sort of a shocking turnaround in the UK, because they had adopted this so much that there were pressure campaigns to get people like J.K. Rowling to stop talking about it. Right. And the same type of thing that we see here in the United States. And first off, we've heard almost nothing here in the United States about the CAST report. If you haven't heard about it, you should look it up. You know, the people who are listening on the radio here. But Michael, I mean, if there's going to be a political change, it might be going in the other direction, right? Which is that Planned Parenthood might need to hide this even more in the places where they're doing this.
I mean, I agree. The CAST report was very powerful, and it was, you know, done in Great Britain. It was not done by scholars that had an obvious, you know, ideological agenda. It seemed to be rigorous research, good public health. And you're right, outside of explicitly conservative or Christian, you know, media in the U.S., it's gotten, you know, very, very little in the way of attention. You know, I do think the truth, you know, does, you know, win out over time. It may take a while, but it does. You know, I do think we need, you know, competent public health professionals to start speaking out about some of these treatments for quote unquote, you know, gender confusion. You know, I do commend, you know, the Great Britain scholars who did the CAST report. I hope it gets more attention, and I'd like to see other countries do something similar.
Well, and Denmark actually did. You know, and this was prior to the CAST report, right? I'm not sure if you're familiar with this either, Michael. Michael and I know each other for a while, so I just throw things at him just to to see if I can stun you here, Michael. But you know, Denmark actually did a fairly in-depth, long longitudinal look at sex change therapies and their outcomes, because one reason is that Denmark collects almost a scary amount of data on everybody in the country through their single payer healthcare system. So, you know, it does give you lots and lots of data, but It is not a place for privacy. I'll just say that. So if you're concerned about privacy, maybe Denmark's not where you want to go. But in this particular case, it gave researchers the type of scale that you don't normally find in research and you know, lab work and that sort of thing. And what they found was that people who were receiving these exchanges were 7 times more likely to have had a psychological, you know, a serious psychological diagnosis other than dysphoria, and that they were, I believe, 6 times more likely to have either attempted to commit suicide or actually succeeded at committing suicide. And this data came out maybe about a year ago. And again, this is another study that people aren't talking about. And so I know we're going to get back to the Planned Parenthood thing, but I mean, there is actual science now that's starting to pile up here. And I would say that the media establishment here in the United States is doing their best to try to ignore it.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, data from public health registries is very powerful. I mean, I agree there's legitimate concerns about privacy, but it's inclusive. And right. The problem with the studies our opponents cite is they're anecdotal. And that's not good research. People who volunteer to be researched aren't a representative sample. People going through tough circumstances probably are not going to make themselves available to researchers. But when you get data from a public health registry, it's comprehensive, it's thorough, it's powerful. And again, I just think we need more thorough research of this time. And, you know, again, I do think that the tide may well turn on this whole issue about transgender issues and gender confusion.
Well, I certainly hope so. And again, we're speaking with Michael New, Associate Scholar at the Charlotte Lozier Institute, a Research Associate at the Bush School at the Catholic University of America. He's also, by the way, a contributor to National Review Online and The Corner at National Review. And you can often read Michael's thoughts on the data, especially when it comes to abortions and Planned Parenthood. So let's return to Planned Parenthood. One of the things that I read, and this is at a different website, LifeSite, is that there is a concern because, you know, as you said, $700 million or just shy of $700 million in government grants and reimbursements. And that was a 4.2% rise over its funding the previous year. But a lot of what the Planned Parenthood Foundation is doing is legal work trying to go after now state-based restrictions on abortion. They're spending a lot of money on that. And there are some people who are arguing that basically the federal government is, in essence, subsidizing Planned Parenthood's assault on state-based restrictions on abortion. Now, I mean, there's always been some of that, but I don't know has that been quantified? How much of their income is going into these legal fights?
I don't necessarily know. They really break down their annual reports and, you know, discuss exactly how much they spend on litigation, but I think that's right. Certainly a valid point. I mean, money is fungible, and I mean, people often say that, you know, money that goes for, you know, healthcare reimbursements doesn't fund abortion. That's not true. You know, essentially, if the government is reimbursing Planned Parenthood for pregnancy tests or some other medical procedure, indirectly, that does subsidize that abortion business. So, again, money going to Planned Parenthood does subsidize abortion and does subsidize this litigation against pro-life laws. So that's certainly a valid point raised by LifeSite and other publications.
Michael, you know, after Dobbs, a number of states either had previous abortion bans or restrictions on the books that suddenly became valid again, or they have since passed these laws. For instance, Florida restricted abortion now to 6 weeks. Texas, the same thing. Does Planned Parenthood still operate in those places? And if so, what are they doing in those places?
Planned Parenthood, I think, still operates in Florida, Texas, and other states that have enacted strong pro-life laws. There may be individual senators that have shut down, but they've not left these states, you know, tragically. They continue to do abortion referrals. You know, they do link women seeking abortions up with abortion facilities out of state, which is tragic. Right. You know, and some of the Planned Parenthood facilities, you know, tragically do these, you know, transgender procedures. Some of them do offer some other health care services, though, as I've said before, I think that's mostly PR on their part. But mostly they exist to do abortion referrals. and make women aware of out-of-state facilities that will, in fact, do abortions.
Michael, and this isn't part of the report, but it's part of other data that you've talked about before. You may have even talked about it here, but just to refresh people's memories as we wrap this up, we're now a couple of years past Dobbs. We have had states enact laws that restrict abortions. How many lives have been saved? How many babies have been saved from abortions in that period of time? Just, I don't know if you have specific data, but it's a significant number, I believe.
I mean, it's clearly the tens of thousands. I mean, one thing I've always done is looked at birth data. Abortions are hard to count because women go out of state, they get chemical abortion pills through the mail, and it's just tough to count. But if more children are being born, that's very powerful statistical evidence that these pro-life laws are working. And we know that in Texas, about 7 months after the Heartbeat Act took effect, the number of children being born in Texas increased by about 1,000 a month. So that's just one state there. So it's clearly in the tens of thousands. We've seen big birth increases in Mississippi. We've seen birth increases in other states. Again, that's very powerful evidence these laws are saving tens of thousands of lives.
And, of course, you can find out more from Michael New at National Review Online or at his work at the Charlotte Lozier Institute and at the Bush School at the Catholic University of America. Michael, where else can people find your work?
The best way to keep in touch with me is through Twitter. My Twitter handle is @Michael_J_New. That's @Michael_J_New. I tweet out pro-life commentary almost every day.
Well, Michael, thank you so much for being with us today. Thank you for bringing these stats to life for us, literally and figuratively, and for a great discussion on the frontiers of the pro-life movement here, I think, in the next several years. When we come back, we're going to be talking with Christian Toto of HollywoodandToto.com because it's a Friday, and you're going to be looking at what's coming up at the theaters. Is there anything worth going to see at the theater? Well, that's what Christian and I are going to discuss. I'm Ed Morrissey, filling in for Drew Mariani. We'll be right back.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio. Connect with Drew on the Relevant Radio app.
With flexible premium life insurance by sponsor Catholic Order of Foresters, a 40-year-old can get $1 million coverage for under $19 monthly. Go to relevantradio.com/Forrester. That's relevantradio.com/Forrester. An Illinois Life Insurance Society, not available in all states.
The Drew Mariani Show is here for you at 888-914-9149.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
It's 29 minutes past the hour. I'm Ed Morrissey of HotAir.com, filling in for Drew today. Don't forget, the top of the hour, Cale Clark's show is going to have a discussion about whether Taylor Swift is compatible with Catholicism. That should be very interesting. Plus, the infinite confusion over infinite dignity and the week that was. So stay tuned. 5 Central Time, right at the top of the hour, the Cale Clark's show. Joining me now, though, is a good friend of mine and actually a colleague of mine these days, Christian Toto. He's a film critic who hosts the Hollywood and Toto podcast. You can find his reviews and his coverage of the entertainment industry at HollywoodandToto.com. And Christian and I also do a regular podcast now at Hot Air called Off the Beaten Path, where we discuss all sorts of different cultural topics, usually stuff that's not necessarily top of the headlines, but is near and dear to our hearts. Christian, welcome to the show.
Oh, good to be here. Thanks for having me.
Hey, it's great to have you on here. You know, on Fridays when I fill in for Drew, I always like to do some sort of, ramp up to the weekend, right? Because people work hard all week long, and they want to be entertained on the weekend. If they're doing lots of different things, lots of different ways to get entertained, and we start that off kind of talking about movies, but I want to talk about something that you wrote about today because I was actually unaware that this was actually going on. Netflix has a special, and I'm a subscriber at Netflix. I do subscribe to Netflix. Netflix has a special that is going to celebrate the lengthy career of disgraced CBS News anchor Dan Rather. It's called Rather. I mean, I am amazed at how Hollywood has stuck to its guns and trying to rehabilitate Dan Rather. I mean, I can't think of why, but by golly, they're committed. They're committed to the bit, Christian. I don't know what this is about. And maybe you can tell us a little bit about Netflix's Rather.
Sure. Well, I mean, I think a more accurate title would be Rather Not, because, I mean, this guy ended his career in such disgrace and such humiliation. And then he got worse and worse as a journalist. But, you know, this isn't the first time that Hollywood has tried to revive him. They made a movie in 2015, shockingly, called Truth. And
yes.
That was Robert Redford playing Dan Rather.
And Kate Blanchett, you know, playing the producer, right? Mary Mapes. Yeah. I remember.
And that one argued that he was right, they were right, and the system brought them down. And, you know, of course, he was wrong, and the system didn't want to bring him down, but they really had no choice. And one of the many things that went through my mind when I heard about this new documentary was, you know, if this had happened today, if Dan Rather had pulled the stunt where he pretended that there were documents that were, you know, casting President George W. Bush in a very negative light regarding his National Guard service, he'd get a promotion. we're living in an era where fake news isn't criticized, it's celebrated, it's promoted. And, you know, we've seen that with the Hunter Biden laptop and Russian collusion hoax. So I couldn't escape that thought. But, you know, we all make mistakes, and journalists sometimes make profound mistakes. And the fact that he basically stuck to his guns and said, no, I've got the story right, is still staggering to me. And the fact that they're going to make a documentary which is, you know, hailing him as a hero is equally absurd. Listen, I haven't seen it, but all you have to do is read the statements from the directors, from the people who have seen it, the fact that Dan Rather is traveling near and far to help screen the film in different festivals. You know, it's a mash note to Rather, and he is so undeserving. And one last quick point. You know, this was actually the dawn of the blogosphere, when a lot of bloggers came out of the woodwork and said, hey, those memos are fake. Look at the typography.
I was one of them.
Powerline was, yeah, absolutely.
Well, I mean, Powerline Little Green Footballs. Yeah, Powerline and Little Green Footballs had the lead on that. But I was one of the secondary ones, especially about typography, because I used to do a lot of work in document publication and in the defense industry. It wasn't related to what the Texas Air National Guard was doing, but all you needed to do was look at those memos and realize that they weren't produced on a typewriter. There's a thing called kerning, right? When you are working with professional typeset typography, the kerning on adjustable fonts makes the spaces even. Whereas in typewriters, it's the characters that are even, and it looks much less well formatted. Let me put it that way. Mm-hmm. And sure. And you know, it just, there's a difference between typing and printing in this particular case. Printing uses kerned fonts. Typewriters, by their definition, are using, you know, fixed fonts. Mm-hmm. And when you looked at those documents, and I think CBS's big mistake was releasing the documents, because if they hadn't done that, nobody would have caught them doing this. And just to remind people of what the story was, because it is 20 years ago. It was 20 years ago in September of 2004, which was just a few weeks prior to the presidential election. 60 Minutes 2, not 60 Minutes, but 60 Minutes 2, did this supposed expose where they had received genuine Texas Air National Guard memos that detailed how George W. Bush got preferential treatment based on family interference, and that he never showed up for duty, and that he was, you know, he's basically gold bricking and trying to get out of serving an actual tour in Vietnam. And they ran this story with a couple of very dodgy characters, one of whom was a longtime Democrat Oppo guy. And I can't think of his name. I want to say it was Burkett? Bill something or other. Bill Burkett. Thank you. It's been a while since I looked at this story, and it was pretty damning, right? It looked damning. But they put those memos on the screen, first off. And even looking at them on the screen, you know, they looked way too professional for some, you know, Air National Guard unit. You know, these are supposed to be memos, like just inter-office memos that people would type up. And I can't remember the attorney's name. The attorney who first spotted the issue actually was one of the attorneys working in the Donald Trump case. I can't think of his name now, but he's a friend of the Powerline guys. And he's the guy that took it to them and said, "This, there's something very fishy about these documents once they were released." And Christian, I mean, we're talking with Christian Toto. When they got the documents, when the CBS released the documents, everybody's looking at this. And he was the first guy to say, this is not the type of memo that an Air National Guard office would produce. The nomenclature was incorrect, first off. It wasn't the same lingo that was being used. And then it was Little Green Footballs that did the merge between the PDF document that CBS supplied everybody and the same exact memo in a Microsoft Word format. And it matched perfectly, right? The default font on a Microsoft Word document, which does use kerning. You know, this is a what you see is what you get program. And I pointed out some other inconsistencies on my blog, and it was really a crowdsourced effort. I was not primary on this. The Powerline guys in Little Green Footballs really did most of the work on this. And the crazy thing about this in terms of Dan Rather is he wasn't even really the guy who was reporting the story. He was the guy that they brought in to be the presenter of the story. This was a story that had been developed by Mary Mapes, the producer of this segment for 60 Minutes 2. And she was the one who had developed all this stuff. And Dan Rather wasn't really even necessarily all that connected to the story. But he embraced it when it was challenged. And to this day, still won't admit that the memos were cooked, even though the person who gave them the memos supposedly admitted that she retyped them because she didn't want to have the source outed by news. That was a convenient little story. So yeah, I'm sure that none of this is going to get in the, none of this came into play in the movie Truth, as far as I know, because I never did actually watch it. But the Powerline guys did.
You know, interesting. As you're describing all this story, you know what my thought is? This would make a really compelling movie.
And it would.
The people who made the movie decided not to tell the story. They decided to tell a different story, trying to exonerate Dan Rather. So they ignored the truth. They came up with another story. The movie bombed, by the way. It was a big box office disappointment for sure. And no one really cares about it anymore. But the whole episode is fascinating. And, you know, one of the things that really made me giddy in a weird way about this new documentary is that I'm reading some of the press material and some of the comments about Dan Rather from his fans. And they said, well, you know, he emerged as, you know, after this whole debacle, he emerged as this amazing journalist where he really, you know, spoke truth to power. I'm thinking, no, he didn't. He became a hard left, basically op-ed person saying what every other person on the left says. And also, has he broken any stories? Has he been an innovator since this whole crash and burn situation? No, he's just on Twitter and he sounds like any other far left individual. That's not journalism. It's punditry at the best you can say about it. But the whole thing, I mean, just trying to reignite his career. And I mean, I think he's a much older man now. And he, you know, listen, good for him. Seems like he's in good health and he's still putting up tweets and, you know, God bless him. He can do what he wants. But to try to say that he got the story right, that he didn't end his career in disgrace, that he's someone that we should be looking up to, it's all nonsense. And I guess Netflix is A-okay with it. It's coming, I think May 1st it'll be released on Netflix. And, you know, I get a lot of Netflix PR releases. I get a lot of material from them. Hey, this is coming soon. This new movie's on the way. Not a peep about this movie. And I almost wonder if they're a little bit embarrassed at putting it out on their platform.
I mean, I think they should be embarrassed by it. I mean, and again, we're speaking with Christian Toto of HollywoodandToto.com. I forgot to mention that he's on Twitter, just like Dan Rather is, but he's at Hollywood and Toto, at Hollywood and Toto. And I would much rather follow Christian Toto than Dan Rather. But Dan Rather is the guy who basically created the fake but accurate defense. He didn't put it that way. When it came out that the memos were very clearly cooked and they were created on a word processor and then basically photocopied over and over and over again to degrade it so that it looked like they were old, right? I mean, that was the process that happened. And he said his argument was, well, those might not be the original memos. Those memos might not be authentic, but the story is still accurate. And that was where fake but accurate came from. And, you know, the CBS did an internal review of this that was absolutely damning. It's the reason why they fired Mary Mapes and they fired Dan Rather, was as a result of this. It was an independent review. They'd hired Richard Thornburgh and, you know, William Thornburgh. Actually may have been Richard Thornburgh. He was a former attorney general, well-respected by everybody. And he put together a very, very critical report of everybody involved, but especially Mary Mapes and Dan Rather. And Mary Mapes was the person that Cate Blanchett played in Truth as a sympathetic character. In this particular thing, but to get back to this, this was an attempt to basically interfere with the presidential election, which, you know, yeah. I guess in 2004 was okay, but in 2020 or 2024 is bad, right? Via disinformation and misinformation, which we're hearing all sorts of things about from the media today. And yet this was a real media created disinformation campaign about George Bush, and they're still trying to hail him as a hero. I mean, it's amazing that Netflix is even bothering to do this, and I'm not surprised at all, Christian, that they're embarrassed to put it in their PR outlet.
Yeah. You know, another thing, I think the media, as much as it's fallen in recent years, even back in 2004, there was enough gravitas, there was enough shame, there was enough, well, we did something really bad, where this became a scandal, where he did have to leave, where there was an investigation. Because, you know, we've seen with the Hunter Biden laptop, it was a similar situation, close to the election, a huge story, buried and buried again. And there's never been any sort of investigation into why it was buried, why the news outlets worked to suppress it. I mean, that's, in a way, it's the same story. It's just that back in 2004, journalists still had enough sense of what their job was to have some, to try to correct the record, to fix things. And, you know, I think if it happened today, I think everyone on the right would bring up all the issues and note how wrong this is and the memos are bad. And I think nothing would happen, at least until after the election.
No, I think you're right. By the way, it was Richard Thornburgh. I just went back through and double checked that. Richard Thornburgh and Louis D. Bocardi, who was a former top executive of the Associated Press, partnered to do the investigation of that 60 Minutes 2 presentation, I guess you can call it. There's all sorts of different, I mean, there's all sorts of different really good reporting on this, so people should check that out. But yes, this was, I mean, this is rehabilitating fake news is what they're going to do. And that's exactly what Robert Redford tried to do with Truth 9 years ago. I actually thought it was farther back than that, but yeah, it was 9 years ago. They're trying to rehabilitate fake news, and this was fake news, and that's why Dan Rather is no longer employed by a news agency. So, as our producer put it to me in chat, rather not. Rather not.
Can I? There's a quick quote from Dan Rather back in 2015 when the movie Truth came out. that's really relevant here, no pun intended. He said everybody's entitled to their own opinions, but they're not entitled to their own facts. And the fact is we reported a true story and we lost our jobs because of that. So his angle, and I think that was reflected in the movie Truth, was that CBS and the powers that be couldn't handle the truth and were trying to protect the president. That's President Bush. He's a Republican. When are the news media so enamored with a Republican in the Oval Office that they do anything to save his skin? It's so absurd. It's so silly. And listen, I mean, he should be relegated to the dustbin of history as far as a journalist goes. And you know, at the end of the day, if he made a mistake and his team made dozens of mistakes, if they all came clean and said, "Oh my gosh, we screwed this up. We are so sorry. We're going to have an internal investigation to find out why this happened." I think I'd be okay with that. I mean, I've made mistakes in my journalistic career, and you try to correct the record, you apologize, you do what you can. We're all human, and it's an industry where mistakes happen, and they happen often. But you need transparency, you need honesty, you need a sense of when you make a mistake, you have to come clean quickly. Without it, you're not trustworthy. And Dan Rather is not a trustworthy individual at this point.
That's exactly correct. Christian Toto of Hollywood and Toto. We're talking with him, taking your calls at 888-914-9149. We're going to go to a quick break right now. When we come back, we're going to take a look at what's coming up at the box office. Is there anything out there for people to watch, especially people who might want to go to the movies with their families? I'm Ed Morrissey, filling in for Drew Mariani. We'll be right back.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
This is your last chance to accompany Father Rocky on a Relevant Radio pilgrimage to Poland and Prague in September. Very limited spots are available. Departing from Chicago and San Francisco airports only, reserve your spots now at relevantradio.com/Poland. That's relevantradio.com/Poland.
The Drew Mariani Show is on Relevant Radio.
It's 50 minutes past the hour. I'm Ed Morrissey of HotAir.com, filling in for Drew today, talking with Christian Toto from HollywoodandToto.com, also a contributor at Hot Air. And we're heading to the weekend, man. We're just about there, as are a lot of our listeners, Christian. So what's coming up at the box office that might be of interest to them this weekend?
You know, the pickings are a little slim. I'll mention a couple of films. One is Abigail. It's a very hard R-rated horror film. I thought it was just chaotic. I actually like horror films, and it has a touch of comedy. I enjoy that combination, but it's not a good example of that kind of humor or that kind of movie. So I definitely don't recommend that. Civil War is in its second weekend. That's one that everyone's been talking about. I literally just caught up with it a few hours ago. That's the America's at war with itself. What's going on? And it's stridently apolitical movie. It doesn't have any context whatsoever. It is not liberal. It is not conservative. It's just about the war photographers tracking the chaos on the ground. And I found it edgy and interesting and sometimes engaging, but also pointless. I didn't know what the whole purpose was, because it basically shows war journalists as being, you know, stubborn and relentless, and sometimes they're adrenaline junkies, and they are very brave, and they risk their lives. And I think we all know that. I mean, we all appreciate the people who put their lives in harm's way to capture these events. But other than that, it just felt pointless. So I think that's a lot of smoke and not enough fire from a pop culture point of view. There is one movie I want to mention. It hasn't gotten a lot of attention. It's called The Long Game. It co-stars Dennis Quaid. It's about a Latino man who's basically wants to join a golf club, and he's kicked out because he's, sort of the racist policies of this organization. I think it may be based on a true story. And so he ends up working with some young Latino teenagers. He kind of gets their esteem up. He works with them and teaches them golf. And it's a really uplifting tale. So good reviews in Rotten Tomatoes. I'm looking at 81% right now and 97% from audiences. So it might be one of those sleeper films that doesn't get enough attention. It's only rated PG, so it's probably all for good for the whole family. Called The Long Game, and Jay Hernandez is the star, and of course Dennis Quaid's in there as well.
Well, I mean, Dennis Quaid's been doing a lot of very interesting, sort of culturally conservative, at least, or leaning in that direction work. He did the a Ricky Hill story. I think it was just called The Hill. And that was the story of the the baseball player who had, I forget, it was some sort of condition that he had to overcome to try to get into professional baseball. It was really good. It was a really good movie. It was just, you know, one of those small kind of personal movies. Mm-hmm. And I had a chance to interview Ricky Hill himself and the director of the director producer of the film. And it was an interesting film. My wife and I really enjoyed it. So it's interesting that Dennis Quaid is really sort of focusing, I think, on these sort of smaller films. I don't want to say that they're politically conservative. They might be a little bit more culturally conservative than what you would see in Hollywood. And so The Long Game sounds interesting. I might want to see that. There's another film coming out this weekend called The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare, which was getting some attention based on kind of a fun trailer. And, you know, I was kind of thinking that might be sort of like a Kingsman sort of thing, which was pretty violent and definitely R-rated, but, you know, fun in a sort of just a fun sort of thing. Or maybe even an Inglourious Bastards movie, which was, you know, mm-hmm. Quentin Tarantino's film. The star of that, who's also starring in Reacher on Amazon, kind of stepped in it this week in terms of his social media messaging. And I'm not necessarily sure that that's going to help the breakout here for the Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare.
No, it's not. Alan Ritchson, I think, is a star on the rise. I think he's a pretty talented fellow. He's getting more and more roles. But he came out in recent weeks. He blasted cops and said that they kill without purpose or without meaning all the time. He came out very strongly against President Trump. He mocks Christians for supporting President Trump. I just saw this earlier today. He's blasting the James Bond franchise, calling the character misogynistic. I mean, he's taking on these very openly left of center, you know, views. And listen, you can think and say what you want. And at the end of the day, if an actor is good, we should see his movies or her movies. But
right, I agree.
I think that generally speaking, audiences are just exhausted by this. They're just exhausted by the political commentary, and it's often crude, and it's often relentless, and it's often blunt. And I you know, to have him come in a way, his star is rising. He has this moment where he's getting a lot more attention. And just to kind of spit out all these different, you know, divisive comments, I just don't think it serves anyone very well. He's not being very well thought out. He's being argumentative, and he's doing it all when his movie is about to be released in, you know, many, many screens across the country. I just don't think it's wise. Again, he can say what he wants. He's got all the free speech rights that we all do. It's perfectly
absolutely
fine. I have no problem with that. But, you know, I just think, why? Why would you go in this direction? Why wouldn't you kind of just say, hey, I'm in this movie. It's based loosely on a true story. This really did happen to a degree during World War II. We had a blast filming it. I think audiences are going to love it. Hope they check it out. I mean, I don't know why every actor doesn't just take that sort of sentiment. It just seems like that would make the most sense.
Well, I think it's one thing to say I have a set of values and this is my set of values. It's another thing to really denigrate people, right? And to and to speak down to them. And I think that's really is not going to endear yourself to, especially to a audience that's probably more likely to be going to a movie that is titled The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare, or, you know, the type of genre that Reacher is. And in terms of Amazon, I want to ask about one other film. And I don't know if you've even heard about this. I was just looking at Box Office Mojo to see what was coming out this weekend. It's called Hard Miles, and it's going to debut this weekend. I think it's been making the show, you know, the
festival circuit, maybe, or
yeah, exactly, the festival circuit. Thank you. I could not pull that name out of my head. Stars Sean Astin, Matthew Modine. Prison social worker assembles a cycling team of teenage convicts and takes them on a transformative 1,000-mile ride inspired by the life of Greg Townsend and the Ridgeview Academy cycling team. Hadn't heard anything about this, and it seems like it's a PG-13 film. It seems like the kind of film that you might hear about, you know, through the, you know, maybe the conservative grapevine or, you know, the word of mouth grapevine that sometimes bloggers like myself get to be in on rather than being, you know, overlooked. I haven't heard anything about this. Have you heard anything about it?
I am just looking at it right now on my laptop, and I agree. You know, first of all, smaller films like this, which we're discussing, sometimes they need a leg up. They need someone to kind of, you know, ring the bell, get attention, tell people they're out there. And, you know, I've been frustrated that often films that have a natural audience, either right of center or faith-based or just both sometimes, they don't reach out to you and I as much as they should. And it's not about our egos. It's about the audiences that we have and the people that might be very curious about a movie that's uplifting and positive and you know, is something that's a bit of a change of pace for what we see in Hollywood. So, you know, I'm not a fan of their marketing team, apparently, or maybe they don't even have one. But, yeah, this does sound interesting.
It does sound interesting. And, of course, you're going to be able to find out all sorts of interesting things at Hollywood in Toto, hollywoodintoto.com. You can follow Christian on his Twitter feed, at Hollywood in Toto. And again, we combine up for a weekly podcast called Off the Beaten Path at hotair.com. And if you're a VIP member, you get access to that. Christian, thank you so much for giving us this springboard into the weekend. Coming up next is Cale Clark. Is Taylor Swift compatible with Catholicism? You're about to find out. I'm Ed Morrissey, filling in for Drew Mariani. Have a great weekend.